This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News. Baltimore bridge collapse. I'm Chuck Sievertson. A long and dangerous search has not turned up six missing construction workers, says Secretary of the Maryland State Police, Colonel Roland Butler.
We're going away from the search and rescue portion to a recovery operation.
The contractor involved, Brawner Builders, expressing condolences, company attorney Jeffrey Pritzker.
Where they were working on the bridge was right in the center span of the bridge, so it's quite possible that they heard nothing and had no idea what happened until it happened.
At the scene, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg.
It's too soon to offer estimates on what it will take to clear the channel and reopen the port.
At tonight's Mass at Baltimore's Cathedral of Mary, our Queen, Archbishop William Laurie.
While we know that our lives are fragile, a moment such as this reminds us what can change in but an instant.
This is ABC News. It's a documentary that took social media by storm, and now there's a new installment.
It was a toxic environment.
The headline-making docuseries Quiet on Set, The Dark Side of Kids TV, is getting another chapter. The Nickelodeon exposé premiered a couple of weeks ago on Investigation Discovery with four episodes. Now ID is adding a fifth that they say will delve deeper into the toxic and dangerous culture at Nickelodeon in the 90s and 2000s. It'll feature new interviews with former child star Drake Bell, who revealed in the series that he was sexually abused by a Nickelodeon employee, as well as reactions from others in the wake of the doc's popularity. Episode 5 will hit ID on April 7th, then stream on Max. Jason Athenson, ABC News.
Buckingham Palace officials say King Charles III and Queen Camilla will attend an Easter service at the chapel at Windsor Castle on Sunday. A British court has ruled that Julian Assange can't be extradited to the U.S. to face espionage charges unless authorities can guarantee he won't face the death penalty. The U.S. has until April 16th to provide assurances. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
Matt Nair on air.
The hearing surrounding the alleged Biden crime family didn't go very well for House Republicans. They got nothing.
They also have no way of moving this country forward. Every 45 days, we're on the brink of a shutdown because these idiots can't come together and put forth a budget. How about this? You don't get to try to impeach anybody until you finish your homework.
I would heartily back that.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Nightline with Pete Schwabba.
Sam Neill talked about being at the Jurassic Park premiere in London with his 10-year-old son and sitting next to Princess Diana. Apparently, Sam Neill's son had really bad gas through the whole premiere. His biggest fear was that Princess Di thought it was him, and he didn't say anything. He did not out his son. I think that's so cool.
That's a great dad right there.
That's a great dad.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights 7 till 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Former President Donald Trump holds his first Wisconsin rally of the presidential campaign on Tuesday. His campaign says Trump will visit Green Bay on the day of the state's presidential primary election. Wisconsin's a battleground state, and the Marquette poll says only 2% of voters here haven't made up their minds. Efforts to debunk election conspiracy theories in Wisconsin resume in West Bend. That's where Kathy Bernier and the group Keep Our Republic hold a Tuesday seminar.
If we have a successful election with no drama or accusations, that will be a success.
Bernier speaking with WISN-TV's Upfront. Keep Our Republic was formed to counter doubts about the 2020 election. And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
The Brewers lose their leadoff batter. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Garrett Mitchell was expected to be the Brewers' leadoff hitter for Thursday's opening day in New York against the Mets, but after an MRI, it was discovered the 25-year-old center fielder suffered a fracture in his left hand. He's expected to go on the injured list and be out the first 4 to 8 weeks of the season. Mitchell hurt the hand during batting practice over the weekend. He missed most of last season with a shoulder injury. NFL meetings going on in Orlando. Packers GM Brian Gutekunst says he's glad running back A.J. Dillon agreed to re-sign signed with the team because there was no way they could have hung on to both Josh Jacobs and Aaron Jones.
To get AJ back, it was that was a kind of a nice surprise. But I think that, you know, the free agent running back class was very, you know, it was very strong. There's a bunch of experienced runners out there.
And the Packers signed a veteran kicker, Greg Olsen, a free agent after 3 years with the Vikings. He'll compete with Anders Carlson, who struggled in his rookie season in Green Bay. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Maybe an evening flurry, otherwise cloudy tonight, breezy, lows low 20s. Some sunshine returns tomorrow, but cold, high mid 30s, and mostly sunny and into the mid 40s for Thursday. Friday looks mostly cloudy with a chance of rain in the late afternoon and evening. Highs return to the mid 50s. Currently, it's 26.
Wednesday morning on Up North News Radio, rural America holds the key to energy independence, but a lot of rural counties are banning wind and solar projects.
This is the talk you can't ignore, even if you tried.
Why is everyone ignoring me?
Find out why all of La Crosse is talking about Eagle 1490.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, any cut deeper.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade.
Aneen, I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
We are Alusa Nation.
Hey, Kutagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local and national Native news and events, and as you know, Chuzunk, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Yes, you are right, Dega. This portion of the show is supported by Native Roots Radio Network on Patreon. Supporting Native news, stories, and events, that's Native Roots Radio Network on Patreon.
Hey, Wendy, it's like I'm a broken clock. I'm right once a day, at least.
Once a day. That's about it.
I'm sleeping during the other time. Hey, we got an awesome show today. And Haley, I was wondering, too, if you could just give us a promo on what the show is going to be about today. And there's some events happening tonight that we really want to promote.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yesterday we had on the great Leah Hale, who is the director and editor for The Electric Indian, which is the documentary on the great hockey legend, Ojibwe Henry Boucher. So that'll be airing tonight in Twin Cities on TPT at 8 p.m. So make sure to catch that. And then if you're also just staying in and hunkered in, hiding out from the snow here in Minnesota like I am, you can stay tuned. Well, I guess this will come out today anytime. But our guest today, Diane Fraher, is the director and film writer for this new film that follows two Osage sisters and just kind of their growing up and coming to age story. So this, The Heart Stays by Diane Fraher, will be out on Amazon Prime, DirecTV, and all of those streaming services today. So make sure you catch that new film, The Heart Stays, which, you know, I'm just so excited that we have more representation in film. And, you know, this time coming around, a director and a writer that's also Native. And I believe she, Diane, is Osage Nation and Cherokee descent, which I'm really excited to see this film.
Yeah, and thanks for that intro. And Wendy, we're going to be talking about a couple things, but I know we want to bring up what's coming up at the Capitol.
Yeah, the Minnesota State Capitol. Howling for Wolves is sponsoring an event there called called Wolf Day at the Capitol, and that's at the Minnesota State Capitol, and it's on April 17th, which is Wednesday, April 17th. Go on Howling for Wolves, Google them, go on their events page and register. So this is a event that you should register for. Meet us at the Capitol at 10 a.m. on April 17th, and we will advocate to keep our Minnesota state wolves safe. So wolves may not be allowed to be hunted now. So right now they are safe, but that does not mean that they are safe indefinitely. And did you know when wolves were first delisted from the endangered species list in Minnesota in 2012, over 700 wolves were killed in 1 year by hunters and wildlife services. The only way to control wolf hunting is to ban it. So that's what we want to do on Wolf Day on Wednesday, April 17th at the Minnesota State Capitol. Register at Howling for Wolves event.
Oh.
Like to howl a little bit before we talk about Howling for Wolves. Or after, you know, one of the things too, Wendy, you know, remember that that legislator that had the beard and called me out on? Well, I just saw he put something up about an elk hunt up north that he wants to have.
What?
And, yeah, and we're just like sick of these people that don't have any respect for human and nature. Mm-hmm. I do mean human nature as our relatives.
Well, what they're doing, I mean, the wolves will hunt the elk. And what they're doing is just messing up the ecosystem by hunting the elves, hunting the, not elves, elks.
I wasn't sure what I heard
hunting
there.
Hunting the elks and hunting the wolves, and they're making a whole big mishmash so they're not, you know, they can't control each other. So it's just making a mess.
Well, and to say that.
Just make a mess of everything.
Yeah. And to say that they do it to control the populations or that the populations have grown too much and they're out of control. Okay. So, you know, don't kill 700 of them. You know, that's not controlling a population. That's, you know, a genocide, which, you know, I think we're all a little bit too familiar with.
Well, before we get too deep into this too, I want to let everyone know that we're out in our Long Island studios, Wendy. And Wendy, you are in the same building as I am, but you have your own studio.
I'm in the WC studio here in New York.
And what does WC stand for?
Water closet. I'm in the water closet. So that we don't echo and hear feedback from each other.
There you go.
Hey, one of the things too, Haley, I want to kind of finish this segment up and talk a little bit about what you sent me in your investigation reporting about a man pleads guilty and killing, eagle killing spree on a reservation to sell feathers and on the black market. Yeah. And this stuff still goes on.
Yeah, which is really unfortunate. And I was just very shocked to see this. And, you know, this is one that hits heavy for both of us. Well, all of us, really. You know, we're right. Eagle Clan, Ho-Chunk Nation, and eagles. And, you know, I just think it's also a federal bird. You know, it's protected. So why are we doing this? And, you know, yeah, just, again, no respect for nature, no respect for the spiritual meaning that's behind our bald eagles. And I don't even think I want to know what people were doing with these eagle parts that they're buying on the black market. Just very disgusting.
Exactly. Over 3,600 birds they killed in a 3-year spree.
Too many.
Wendy, you're on mute.
Did you say where this happened, Haley? I'm sorry, I was on mute. Washington State?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shooting eagles on an American Indian reservation in Montana. So right. If they're on a reservation, that's how are they able to get on there and hunt in the first place?
Well, illegally, I'm sure they're sneaking up there with their gun and doing it. You know, we're federally recognized, and we have the laws behind us where we can have eagle feathers as Native Americans because we use it in religious practices. But any person that's not an enrolled member or citizen of a nation, it's illegal for them federally to have any kind of eagle feather.
Right. And I know just even hiking in the woods too, I've seen, and I don't want to be like, oh, well, they're non-native people, because I don't know, but I've seen people and just kind of like younger kids, digging below eagle's nests at the bottom of trees in parks and state parks. And they're just digging up, the leaves and the sticks and whatever's below the nest, looking for these feathers as if they're going to find one and be able to walk out of the park with it. And I never know what to say, you know, coming from Eagle Clan, and I have, you know, spiritual ceremonial feathers, and it's just, it's scary when things like this and religious practices, what, whose hands they can end up in.
Well, one of the things too, that I could, ask for, through the BIA is, to get eagle feathers, or whether it's a whole eagle or not, but these are eagles that passed away. These aren't people, or these aren't eagles that somebody's shooting them. And, you know, Wendy has an eagle feather, but she was named in a ceremony, has a Ho-Chunk name. And so she has a right to have hers too. And, and she's married in an eagle family, or not only in an Eagle Clan family, but a native family. So she's native.
Yeah, so,
you know,
it's those rules and got to be aware.
What do we have next, next up, Haley?
Yeah, next up, we're going to have film writer and director Diane Frayer with us to talk about her new film, The Heart Stays.
Awesome. Hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents, and we'll be right back.
Unwanted sexting or photos, inappropriate jokes, even tickling or wrestling can feel like a violation. Catcalling, cornering, or groping, getting them drunk or high for sex, recording sexual acts without permission, hurting someone because of their sexual orientation, raping a family member, a child, a date, a friend, a stranger, purchasing a human being for sex. You make the choice every single time. Sexual violence is many things. Make a choice. Do not do it.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis AIR. AIR stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis AIR dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis AIR on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
Hey, if you're like a lot of people, you're probably relieved that the holiday celebrations are over. But there's one thing that might stay with us from the holidays besides all those gifts, and that's COVID-19. Numbers from COVID are going up as we spend more time inside. And Native Americans are seeing even bigger case spikes. With all the indoor celebrations over the holidays, you may have unknowingly been exposed to someone with COVID-19. That's why it's important to stay vigilant. If you notice any symptoms like a fever, a tickle in the throat, or heavy fatigue, take an at-home test. They're still free and can be ordered at sayyeshometest.org. If you do test positive, you're eligible for free treatment, and no health insurance is required. Visit health.state.mn.us to connect with providers and receive your treatment. Let's make 2024 the healthiest year ever, securing a brighter future for our Native community. Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Wake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, we are here with Diane Frayer, and she is, I'm reading your resume here. You are an unbelievable director, writer, and you have a new movie coming out, and it's a coming of age story of two Osage Native sisters, and it's called The Heart Says, and it's going to be on The Art Stays. Thank you. You know what, let's do that over. Can we take this from a minute on?
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, we got a special guest, which are always special here on Native Roots Radio. We got Diane Freyer, who is the producer and director of The Heart Stays, in a coming-of-age story that follows two Native American sisters arriving on demand here on March 26th. Welcome to Native Roots Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Let's talk a little bit about you, and that's we got a couple segments here, and really excited to amplify what's going on. I understand you had a opening last night in a Q&A. Can you talk a little bit about your movie and about yourself, please?
Yes. Well, I'm the writer, director, and producer of The Heart Stays. It is a coming-of-age story of two young Native sisters who leave the safety of family and tradition on their nation to follow their dreams. And one of them gets a scholarship to attend a school in the East, and the other one has decided to become a rock star. And she ends up getting into trouble in following that path. And the older sister has to try to help, attempts to try to help her and to save her own dream at the same time. Yeah. It's a strong Native women's story.
Absolutely. And I'm looking at your cast. Let's talk a little bit about them. It's an amazing cast you have right here. Let's talk about them a little bit.
I can't say enough about the Native people in the cast. It was such an extraordinary experience for all of us to work together. I started looking at casting and putting the project together, pre-development, in 2014. And when I went to cast, I didn't want and did not use non-Native casting directors, because I wanted to go deep in within our communities and find talented people and bring them forth. And I also felt that non-Native casting directors would, the lens that they were seeing our folks through was not necessarily the lens that they needed to be seen through. So by going into community, I knew that we would find the right people for it, and we did.
Yeah, and you know, my favorite is Irene, and I'm an old school Smoke Signals and her early work, so I've been a fan for many, many years. It's great to see her back on the big screen.
Mm-hmm. Well, we had this wonderful combination of Native veteran actors, really seasoned people, also people like Casey Camp Hornick that go back. And then I was able to bring forth two young Native women in the lead role, in the biggest supporting role, so. It was great.
And I see you have John Proudstar, who's been on our show. Awesome person. Great work in Reservation Dogs. Just to say a few things about him. Again, a top-notch cast. And let's talk a little bit more about the story. How does that? How does it start out in a sense with these two siblings? Is it start out as an early story, or kind of where they're at their age right now? And can you tell us a little bit about the story?
Well, the story begins where they are now. Mm-hmm. Again, grounded in family and community. The opening scenes are very much community. And then we shift forward. Actually, we start with an event and then we shift forward to the family dinner table. And that sets the stage for the opening conflict.
So they kind of leave the safety of their traditional family, and it goes on there, and they have to really think about that as things get tougher for them.
Well, I think there's a lot of subtext, because we as Native people see the interconnectedness of everything. Mm-hmm. We don't compartmentalize. So you'll notice that when you see the film, But of course, we made it work for us in the story. I think that for me, I tell stories about the struggle to identify with traditional values, with Native people's traditional values within the context of modern society. Mm-hmm. So I see that as all roads lead to that, because I believe that that is what makes us Native. And I believe that that is what has the power to heal us and sustain us. And so I would say that that's at the heart, the essence of it. The entire film is really about that. And I also believe in our stories so much. I believe in their power to heal us and to inspire us and to communicate with other people. This is part of all of our ancient traditions. And I like the idea that a lot of times stories can, if people will let them into their heart, they will stay with them. They'll be there like a friend for them. So.
Yes. So, Diane, I know you are an enrolled member of the Osage Nation, and this story is following two younger Osage Native American sisters. And where did you get the inspiration, I guess, just kind of to go this path with these young girls?
Well, actually, it's in the specificity. I always say to people that so much of what we've seen about in storytelling has been, first of all, told by almost 99% non-Native people. We need the specificity to bring it to life. The story is not pan-Indian. You know, it's not, mm-hmm. the sisters might find a pan-Indian community when they leave the nation and go, like, for example, the college community is Native people from many different nations. But to me, Pan-Indianism is also an indicator of, in quotes, a generic type of Indian, which really there's no character development at all. It's just, in quotes, Indian, and it can't go anywhere. What we've seen, like, of people in the story, there's going to be no character development. So I felt that it needed to be, of course, it needed to be more specific to bring this to life. And in Osage culture, the oldest child has a great responsibility, whether the child is male or female. And so I wrote the story from the perspective in that, because of that, we could have talked about the younger sister trying to help save the older sister. But we didn't do that, because if it's Osage, then the older sister would have to take care of the younger sister. And also hearing an elder say one time that that this responsibility can be even harder if the oldest child is a woman. So that meant that it had to be a woman's story if we're gonna dig deep into the specificity of culture here. So I think that's what that was leading, that kind of thinking was there with me all the way through in writing the story.
Wow, that's awesome. And so was it hard to balance, you know, that the Osage Native American culture and the kind of coming of age narrative?
Well, I have to say, you know, I just followed my heart and I followed, you know, the love in family. And It actually became fun to get farther into this specificity of the situation and figure out how parts of it are going to be handled. So, and also, again, working with the Native acting ensemble, because it's almost like everybody was in character all the time.
Wow.
So that enabled us to continue to keep elevating everything. Wow. And yet still maintain those universal themes, which is kind of the goal that I think that as an artist, as a storyteller, I think that, of course, has to be our goal, because, mm-hmm. you know, it has to reach beyond just community. We want to share that part of that.
So that kind of goes back to how the inspiring of your casting, how what was that process like?
When I was writing it, it's almost like some people would come to see me.
Wow.
You know, it's I felt them, I could see them, I could feel them. And these were not always, like I said, people that were veterans. These people were people whom I'd known on a more local level, so to speak, more intimately. And it would become clear that they were the ones.
Awesome, Diane. Hey, we want to take a quick break, and we are really excited to have you on here. We're talking about the movie that you are the producer and director of, The Heart Stays, and we're going to be right back after this short break. Please stay with us.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Matt and Air on Air.
This is a special report from ABC News. Baltimore bridge collapse. I'm Chuck Sievertson. A long and dangerous search has not turned up six missing construction workers, says Secretary of the Maryland State Police, Colonel Roland Butler.
We're going away from the search and rescue portion to a recovery operation.
The contractor involved, Brawner Builders, expressing condolences, company attorney Jeffrey Pritzker.
Where they were working on the bridge was right in the center span of the bridge, so it's quite possible that they heard nothing and had no idea what happened until it happened.
At the scene, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg.
It's too soon to offer estimates on what it will take to clear the channel and reopen the port.
At tonight's Mass at Baltimore's Cathedral of Mary, our Queen, Archbishop William Lurie.
While we know that our lives are fragile, a moment such as this reminds us what can change in but an instant.
This is ABC News.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. President Biden and Donald Trump are neck and neck in Wisconsin in the latest Bloomberg News Morning Consult poll. 46% of registered Wisconsin voters back Biden, while 45% support Trump. Last month, Trump had a four-point edge. He'll campaign in Green Bay Tuesday. 501c4 nonprofits are driving record spending by anonymous political donors across the country. That's according to a new study by the group Open Secrets.
When you have dark money groups fueling this spending, the voter may not know what interest the secret donors behind that have in getting a specific candidate elected, a ballot measure passed.
Study author Anna Masolia says that kind of money often pays for misleading attack ads. And that's what Wisconsin needs to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh. Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Maybe an evening flurry, otherwise cloudy tonight, breezy, lows low 20s. Some sunshine returns tomorrow, but cold, high mid 30s, and mostly sunny and into the mid 40s for Thursday. Friday looks mostly cloudy with a chance of rain in the late afternoon and evening. Highs return to the mid 50s. Currently, it's 26.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
These two referendum that you will see on your April 2nd ballot. What is it that Republicans are after here? You cut funding for local elections. You restrict the hours. You restrict early voting. You intimidate and scare election workers so droves of them are quitting. I wonder where all of this is heading.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. This is the talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
Sometimes our healthcare system can feel impersonal. Who can help my healthcare team understand what is important to me? Who can connect me with community services and health resources?
Community health representatives can. Community health representatives, or CHRs, live and work in our community, so they understand your unique health needs and can break down the barriers that get between you and the quality care you deserve. Want to learn more? See all the good community health representatives do at dhs.wisconsin.gov/CHR.
The Todd Alba Show.
Our ride into spring continues. We have some great prizes to give away. A weekend getaway at Chula Vista Resort, a bike, and a three-way blender.
A three-in-one blender.
Oh, three-in-one. Sorry, I misread that. We're having our own political threesome
Todd Alba
here.
Going with the After Dark show all of a sudden.
It's always
this
a pleasure.
Is Civic Media, not Cinemax, Todd.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Talk about lacrosse in Wisconsin without the yelling and screaming. These are real conversations about things that affect you. This is Eagle 1490.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by All My Relations Arts and their current gallery exhibit, O'Keezy, in partnership with the American Swedish Institute, now until April 13th, off of Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis. And right now we're back with Diane Fraher, who is the writer, director, and producer of the new movie, The Heart Stays, which follows two young Native Americans from Osage Nation as they, you know, come of age and go explore the real world off of reservations. So, Diane, thank you so much for being here again with us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we're really excited. This movie will debut on demand on March 26th, which is today, 2024. Could you tell our listeners how they can get this on demand?
I believe it's on going to be on multiple platforms. Is it on? I actually haven't gotten the list. It's I'm supposed to get it here coming through shortly. But
yeah,
do they provide you with a list?
Yes, I think okay. So. I think we do. A digital availability on March 26th, Apple TV, Prime Video, Vudu, Google Play, DirecTV, and more.
Right, and Dish TV too, right?
I think.
Yes. Wow. Okay. Right. So I've been involved more with the showing in the theatrical release. So I'm just now. You have to bear with me here a little bit. This is all happening. It comes together quickly.
So. I know it's. You wonder if it's going to happen, and then all of a sudden, it's all happening at once.
Yes. So.
Well, that's. That's totally exciting, and everybody has those platforms, and I know to be able to, and again, I want to applaud, and we kind of alluded to it a little bit earlier, that Native Americans telling their own story is so, so important. There's so many nuances, and what I love too, when I do see a Native story that's done by a Native story, it's also for the masses, but it also has those fun little quirky things that only natives get. So I'm looking forward to looking for those little pieces too.
You're there.
Yeah, that's great. And
Diane, I gotta say too, I know we're on the topic of this new movie, The Heart Stays. How long have you been in the business of directing and doing film work, and kind of what influenced you to do this type of work?
Well, my first film was The Reawakening, and we sort of began pioneering this model of Native people in artistic leadership positions, working with non-Native professionals in support of us, and also going deeply within community, because I work together with the folks at Onondaga Nation. I'm here in the East, and had been friends and, you know, had alliances, worked with the folks from the Haudenosaunee people, otherwise Iroquois Confederacy, and those nations. And so, and had worked with the folks at Onondaga Nation, and where we worked out a lot of this, some of these ideas, and then I just kept going. But the key thing was always for me that we have to get Native people in positions of artistic leadership so that we are defining who we are. Otherwise, we're just being talked about, and like we said in the earlier segment, it could be anything. I mean, it's not good storytelling to do that, in my opinion. So, and it's also not really Native if we're not. So, right. The dream of for me, in terms of we wanted to pioneer a new artistic approach, like we discussed earlier, in going deeper into the specificity of the storytelling. And which incidentally helps the audience, even non-natives, be able to relate to it more when they're watching it. The more specific you are, the more wider it becomes. But also a production model, which had to take place too. So, and that meant Native people, traditionally people would come in and say, well, we're going to tell this story. And they'd have some folks as their advisors. And then they, in many cases, didn't really listen. That was the pattern. And what we were trying to do is we flipped that over and had Native people as much as possible in positions of artistic leadership, and then worked with seasoned, talented non-Native professionals, and we listened to them, right? And it became like a peer group hierarchy, not a top-down hierarchy. Which is the peer group hierarchy is much more Native. So that opened up more possibilities and for bringing in more Native people. So
can you talk a little bit about the locations of the movie, where it was shot? I know some of it was shot in Osage.
It was shot, again, on Osage Nation, deep within community, had a tremendous amount of support on many levels. Osage Nation Foundation, I received two grants over a period of time, production that I applied to the production of it. We had, again, Native people in positions of artistic leadership. And then, the second half of the story was shot in New York, and mm-hmm. where we worked, Native people from the urban Native community there became much more involved. Most of the actors that we'd worked with on Osage Nation were their parts had been shot. So there were only the two lead actress and the principal supporting role were with us in New York, but then we gave opportunities to and brought in a lot the Native people more from the urban Native community that I'd worked with as artists for years. Mm-hmm. And then galvanized again a tremendous amount of support from people in the New York area, non-Native people joining us. I mean, it's and that was basically how we got it done.
Well, and I'm sure I saw a picture that I think they were in Grand Central Station and mm-hmm. kind of an overwhelming look, which I get every time I'm in New York.
Yes.
I want to ask you about your directing style. Do you stay on top of the script? Or are you able to let the talent improvise, or how many takes? I mean, there's so many different variables of directing a movie. What would you say your style is?
Because we're working, in community, then that opens up the possibility. It deepens the trust between myself and the actors. So mm-hmm. it does open the possibility for some improvisation, mm-hmm. which. That happened both on Osage Nation and then happened here in New York when we did that part of it. And I think any time that you deepen the collaborative process in a film, that's really continues to lift the whole thing up. And I had elders working with me. It's interesting. Both of them, over more than one take, improvised their lines. But yet we were so, we were also connected through the story, mm-hmm. that what they were improvising was just as good, I felt, that we had written. And so I didn't want to risk monkeying with the performance and the continuity of the whole thing. So I said, you know what, we're just going to get a couple of takes and we'll use the one that we feel is best. And but it was fantastic, really, in a way, to see that happen. So
yeah. So a combination of organic and using the script as kind of a path to the scene.
Yes, right. And also because it was Native people leading, we were all, we all understood the story on more than one level. So people were, and I feel like from the very beginning that the actors knew, that they realized that this was a unique opportunity. Okay, for mm-hmm. Native actor, the roles, because there was so much more character development, you know, for them to sink their teeth into, so to speak. And I just want to bring up something, because this is really important, too. We have an all-Native soundtrack.
Wow.
I'm particularly proud of that. The composer's Native, and Jared Tate, singer-songwriter Brooke Simpson is involved in this. She's from Halawa Saponi, Tuscarora community in North Carolina. And then we have some veteran people, Keith Sekola, and Jimmy Wolf, the blues artist, Mohawk blues artist from upstate New York, and then Rex Lyons and the Ripcords from Onondaga Nation. So all of these seasoned professionals and recognized and respected by their peers in the musical and Native musical community. So that added just a whole nother layer of excitement to the process.
Oh, absolutely. And how music can help tell the story too, or accentuate the story. That's naming mm-hmm. those artists is really exciting, because sometimes me as just a movie goer, how important the music plays sometimes is beyond me, but also there's other movies where it's like, wow, you know, the music really helped tell the story.
Yes, definitely.
Oh, so that's we got a minute left. Hailing Diane, let's talk about where people can see this movie, how they can see the movie, and we are so excited to have you on. And we're really excited that Natives are telling their own story. And that's where we're at. You know, we have to do that. And we appreciate all the work that must have been involved in the pre-production and the production and the final story, Diane. So give us, Haley, where people can see it name of the movie again.
Yeah, so you can stream Diane Fraher's new film, The Heart Stays, now March 26th on Apple TV, Prime Video, Vudu, Google Play, DirecTV, and more.
And I always say that we hope that people will let the story into their heart.
Wow, perfect way to end it. A big peenie, thank you so much, Diane, and I'll see you in the big city sometime.
Yes, please. Okay, it's so wonderful to meet you folks and work with you.
Right on. We'll talk to you soon.
Attention transit customers. On Saturday, March 16th, Metro Transit will make changes to transit service within your community. As we do each quarter, we review our resources and ridership trends. These service changes continue our ongoing work to best serve customers throughout our system with our given resources. A summary of the upcoming service changes and a preview of the updated schedules are available now at metrotransit.org.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States.
And 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected.
Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf.
Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy.
As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired.
Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl. As we pack away the ornaments and bid farewell to the holiday season, it's time to unwrap the gift that keeps on giving, getting protected by a COVID-19 vaccination. This is your chance to make a difference, especially as our native communities face higher COVID numbers. Those higher numbers underscore the need for collective action. So answer the call and get vaccinated. The latest vaccines are not just authorized, but they're proven effective against the current variants. This is extra protection, even if you've already had previous vaccines, since previous vaccines will eventually wear off. Plus, the new shots are FDA approved for ages 6 months and up. A COVID vaccine is not just a shot. It's a pledge to safeguard the wisdom and stories handed down by our elders. So join the movement, get vaccinated, and make 2024 the healthiest year ever, securing a brighter future for our Native community. For more information, including details about clinics offering free vaccines, visit vaccines.gov. J&S Bean Factory is a Native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
All My Relations Arts presents Okizi. Okizi means to heal, and the exhibition highlights the healing power of cultural revitalization for Native communities. Okizi showcases prints, mixed media, textiles, beadwork, digital collage, and glass sculptures by Native American and Sami artists. It explores Indigenous communities' active healing efforts through language revitalization, land back movements, and embracing traditional knowledge. Visit All My Relations Arts to experience Okizi through April 13th. More information at allmyrelationsarts.org.
Hi, I'm Chuck Manette, owner of Native Concrete and Masonry. Whether it's cracks in your existing sidewalks, steps, chimney restoration, or a whole new project, you can trust our team to ensure satisfaction through detailed planning and precision. Native Concrete and Masonry is a Native American-owned business, and we have worked with our clients throughout the Twin Cities metro area. We work closely with our clients to accomplish our initiatives. Learn more at NativeConcreteMasonry.com.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Oik, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Hey, I want to reintroduce my awesome and beautiful wife, Wendy. Wendy's been an animal advocate for many years, and she speaks her truth here on Native Roots Radio for the past 7 years and is a co-founder of Native Roots Radio. And I learn so much. And take it away, Wendy.
Yeah. Hey, everybody. My name is Hannah Jihihani. That means cares for them. I was given that name by my Dega Curtis. Curtis goes by Majke Hana Jinga, which means walks on white clouds. I'm a humane policy volunteer leader for the Humane Society of the United States, and I work on animal issues at the local and state level, and it's always my pleasure to do that. I'm really excited because we just got a brand new Minnesota State Director for HSUS, and I'm happy to be going to be meeting with him and working with him upcoming months. So I'm really happy about that. Aaron, congratulations if you're listening. We appreciate you and the work that you do. So I have lots of fun facts as usual. Today I'm going to keep it light because everybody's hunkered down in the snow in Minnesota. And it's always fun to just hear some fun facts and not something that's too harsh. But again, just go on to Howling for Wolves, click on events, and register for Wolf Day at the Minnesota State Capitol on Wednesday, April 17th. I will be there and I'm looking forward to it. So number 12, we're going through a list that's like 110 fun facts, and it's from a site called Fact Animal. And you could go on there and check out all these fun facts. And every time we read these fun facts, I'm astonished because I really learn something new every day. But we left off at number 12. Number 12, little is known about the elusive giant squid. However, the largest squid ever found measured over 50 feet and weighed nearly a ton. That's amazing. So 50 feet, what could you say 50 feet is? Just like the height of a two-story house or something is 50 feet? That's how big a squid is. Isn't that crazy?
Bigger than that. And then take that, Oprah, for eating squid.
Oh, yeah. You know what? We watched Jimmy Kimmel last night and Oprah was on. And I love Oprah. Don't get me wrong. I love her. But she was talking about her longtime partner, Stedman, and how he eats octopus every single day.
Every day?
Every day with okra, like this weird thing that he has for breakfast. But if you ever go on, I would recommend watching, is it called The Octopus Teacher or My? I think it's My Octopus Teacher.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Documentary about this guy who goes in the water every day and meets this octopus and really learns so much about life. By meeting this beautiful animal.
That's an Academy Award winning documentary, too.
Yeah, My Octopus Teacher. I recommend it. Go watch it. Yeah, so anyway, enough about that. Okay, number 13, the pangolin. You know that pangolin animal? It kind of looks like, I would say, like an anteater, but it has like scales on it, like almost armor.
Oh.
Yeah, and it can roll up into a ball, and their armor is so strong, and it protects them against getting eaten by lions. Mm. But the pangolin, I thought this was going to be a fun fact, and here's another Debbie Downer, but the pangolin is one of the world's most poached animals. Oh. They use it in certain cultures and their scales that they, I don't know, put it in tea and eat it and drink it and whatever. And it's supposed to be like an aphrodisiac, but they're beautiful animals. Yeah. Koalas can sleep up to 22 hours a day.
Same.
Yeah. They need more sleep than most animals because their diet of eucalyptus leaves contain toxins, are very low in nutrition and high in fibrous matter. So they take a large amount of energy to digest.
So you guys both kind of eat that kind of food because you both like to sleep.
Yeah. High fiber, I guess.
I love my sleep. I love my sleep.
Me too.
I should have looked this up, but I didn't.
Oh, so no. Here we go.
No, I'm going to skip this one because there's questions about this one. All right, number 16, even after having its head cut off.
Oh, gosh.
A cockroach can live for weeks.
Wow.
Yes. I should probably.
Here we go again.
Debbie Downer.
12 facts. Yeah.
Today. A group of parrots is known as a pandemonium.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's a positive one.
Here's another gross one.
Uh-huh.
Cows poop up to 15 times a day, which can be as much as 115 pounds of manure per day or approximately 21 tons per year.
So you're saying I'm part cow.
Oh, gosh.
The common garden snail has 14,000 teeth. Yeah, the microscopic teeth are called radula, and some species actually have over 20,000 teeth.
Wow.
Yeah, garden snail.
What do they need those teeth for?
You know, the blue whale is the largest animal on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they use it for eating leaves.
Real crunchy leaves.
They're chopping leaves, and they eat plants, I think. I don't know. Another thing I have to look up. The blue whale is the largest animal on the planet. And its tongue, the blue whale's tongue, can weigh as much as a car or a small adult elephant. That's just their tongue.
Wow. Good thing they live in the ocean.
Good thing you read these.
I know. Yeah, some of them I did and some of them I didn't, you know. The longest living verified animal is a Madagascar radiated tortoise.
Soaring high above La Crosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.